Welcome to the Floor Money Audio Commentary. This is David Orr on Friday, the 17th of September, recording at 9:15 p.m., and that's still British summertime. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights of the last week, as this is the big-picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. First, in stock markets, it's been a pretty good week for just about every stock market. If there's an exception, and there is, China's been a little bit lower. I think that's the main exception. But India, the ASEAN markets have remained in pretty robust form overall. Little pause in Thailand as some of former Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawatra's supporters threatened a little bit of unrest, but the markets held up steadily throughout that action to date. The European markets, we've seen a lot of tests of the upper side of ranges. Those are still underway. I think we had Sweden nudge through to a new high in here today, but most of the European stock markets eased a wee bit towards the close. The Americas were mixed, Brazil down a little bit. Wall Street closed out with another gain, but a very modest gain today. What's interesting is that the Standard & Poor's index is testing its May and August highs. Those are range highs, not the highs for the year, but within what's been quite a choppy pattern overall. And I think we'll get a small consolidation here and go higher because the NASDAQ index, which often leads, has already edged above those May and August highs. Now, long-dated government bond prices have remained weak, so yields have nudged a bit higher. The exception to that is JGBs, which where yields have just come down a wee bit. Now, in currency markets, really the story of the week was the intervention to weaken the yen. And that rate has been quiet in the last couple of days, near the 85.78 level, 85.78 yen for the U.S. dollar. As I speak, the resources currencies have been firm, particularly the Australian dollar. It's just been right up back at its highs. The Singapore dollar has been strong as well. The Asian dollar index is rock steady, and the Latin American dollar index isn't doing badly either. In commodities, and there's a whole lot going on here, it's been a banner week for precious metals, particularly gold, but silver has had a great run, and the quietest one this week only has been palladium, which has been consolidating, I think it's consolidating, near its April peak. Gold drifted a little bit here today, having rallied up to 1282, almost 1283 earlier in the day, but kind of a solid performance for the week, closing out at 1273, almost 1274. Now, let's stick with the industrial commodities. The industrial metals have been firm, led by tin, followed by copper, but the performance by nickel's been pretty good as well. And tin is very much a new high for the year. Copper is flirting with that level, the high for the year, that is. And elsewhere, crude oil had a good bounce, but then has encountered some profit taking, and still in the lower side of its big ranging pattern at 73.62 as I speak. The agricultural commodities have mostly been moving to the upside, and corn has been leading that grain and bean complex recently. The early leader a few months ago was wheat, of course, on the Russian news. But corn has taken over the running subsequently on concerns about the U.S. crop. And the well, corn in particular, but also soybeans had a strong day in here today. Some concern over the South American crop, and wheat was also firmer. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, in terms of global stock markets, we have a little bit more evidence that the bulls are winning this contest. The bears keep harping on about the U.S. economy, and that's a woeful story overall, although it's not quite as bad as they were forecasting. To a man and woman, they were forecasting a double-dip recession, and sooner rather than later. Now some of them have rolled that forward to at some point in 2011. We'll see. I kind of doubt it with one proviso, and that concerns the prospects for food price inflation. But the evidence of double dip recession has faded overall. Warren Buffett has said that he doesn't see any evidence of that, and that all of his divisions at Berkshire Hathaway are performing quite well. And we know that we've got a healthy corporate sector. Good comment by that fine analyst from CLSA, Russell Napier, saying, "It's not the economy, stupid." And that it's a play on the on the old Clinton statement when he was running for election, or yes, when he was running for election first time against George Bush Sr. Kept saying, "It's the economy, stupid." Well, Napier is pointing out that it's not, that equities are dirt cheap relative to government bonds. Fuller Money has posted articles to that effect over the last couple of months, and also made that point. And I've said over and over and over again that the stock market is not the U.S. economy. Obviously, it's not unaffected by the U.S. economy, but the real story for U.S. equities. It's the treasure trove of cash they're holding. Yes, they're just sitting on it for the time being, but that's due to some political uncertainty. But that won't be the case always, and a healthy balance sheet shouldn't be frightening investors too much. The other big story for U.S. multinationals, at any rate, is that they are doing extremely well in the portion of the global economy that is actually performing, and that's, of course, Asia, South America, the Middle East. It's really a tale of two worlds as far as economic activity is concerned. Slow growth in the OECD economies, the resources producers excepted, and booming growth led by the Asian progressing markets. Okay. We still have low interest rates. They're edging upwards in the stronger economies. But for instance, India, the Central Bank of India raised its main bank rate this week, a quarter of a point, took it up to 6%. But that's still a negative real interest rate. It's below growth, below GDP growth, and it's also below the rate of inflation. Now that's a very favorable recipe for the stock market. And how many times have veteran subscribers heard me say monetary policy trumps most other factors most of the time? And that's the case for really all these other stock markets, and including the USA. So I think the environment is benign, and as investors reassess the economic outlook for the U.S. to one of feeble growth rather than double dip recession, but good prospects for the multinational corporations that I just mentioned, and with some optimism that the economy may well improve a little bit further, helped by the stronger growth regions of the world. People are reassessing the stock market on a somewhat more bullish footing. I mentioned that the comments that equities were the cheapest they've been to government bonds in the U.S. for 50, 60 years. I've mentioned that, to say, already in this broadcast and on earlier times. But also dividend yields generally have improved over the last year, and that's okay. Valuations in terms of price earnings multiples, that's a soft spot perhaps, but you know, they're not outrageously high, that's for sure. People have been worrying about valuations in India, but the historic PE is currently 19. That's not cheap, but it's a good story. And if you look at charts of Indian PE ratios going back a longer period of time, the market generally runs into trouble when they get up into the 25 region. But that's been against a background of slower growth in the past and less favorable monetary conditions as well. So I don't think that's a bubble, and the forward earnings are probably on 15 because of the at around 15 on average because of the growth. In China, China has really been a wallflower in this rally, mainland China that is, and the Hong Kong indices are really smack in the middle of the pack here in terms of being range bound. But the problem here has been supply. We've mentioned this on a number of occasions. All those IPOs from banks, which have been required to raise their reserve requirements, beef up their balance sheets, in other words, as China combats its overheated property sector. And they're gradually letting some air out of that, and will continue to do so. China's quite good at moving against bubbles, you may have observed, and not for the first time. Now, again, on valuations, the Shanghai Composite Index, sorry, it took me a while to find that, the Shanghai Composite Index is selling at and a historic multiple of about 18. That's on the lower side of its range, and you have to remember that China's been growing at about 10% a year on average for, what, three decades? There are a number of China specialists who feel that the forward multiples on average are really in the sort of 10 to 11 category, and that's really quite attractive for a high growth economy. The problem's all about supply, those IPOs from the banks, and then there were some A shares. I didn't realize this until more recently. Owen posted a really good report on this. I think it was on the 3rd of the month, but I've linked to it in today's comment. But saying that the government was releasing some previously non-tradable A shares into the market. They were doing this on a schedule, and that the peak of that supply that remains will be seen in October and November. So that's a weight on the Shanghai Composite Index over the short term, but the Hang Seng has been moving up steadily, as have so many other stock markets around the world, within their range, I should say, moving up steadily within their ranges. underlying trading continues to look more like support building than a sort of a technical rally beneath the top. So again, I'm reasonably confident that we're going to see the decent fourth quarter in the stock market, that I've been forecasting all along. And Fuller Money themes are distinguishing themselves, and I'm glad to see that. Anybody who has an equity portfolio that's anything remotely like mine will be pretty happy. I say that not as a boast, but as one of relief, really, because I know that a number of you are interested in those long-term investments that I make. And but we comment on a lot of other things besides, and you will know the you will have noticed the extensive coverage of yield, particularly by Owen. Equity yields, that is. Now, moving on to the long-dated government bonds and moving more swiftly given the time spent talking about the stock market, this has the his a technical action has the earmarks of a bottoming out process for the yields, the long-dated yields, and therefore a topping out process for the bond prices. I think that this is likely to continue. I'm only going to be playing long-dated government bonds from the short side, and I have a short position currently. I haven't made any money over the last few months in the long-dated government bonds by shorting them. But I'm thinking in terms of a multi-year bear cycle of yields ranging higher, bond prices ranging downwards. Why might that be when everybody's talking about deflation? Well, I don't think we're Japan all over again. I won't go through those reasons point by point in this broadcast. But there are, needless to say, a lot of different factors. And when your central bank has made it its great cause célèbre to avoid that deflation above all other factors, I wouldn't underestimate the chances of them doing just that, even if they have to print to kingdom come to do it. And we've seen a fair amount of that as part of the quantitative easing. Which still continues. Now, I think bond investors are going to encounter an inflation shock, and it may actually be starting, but I think it will be more front and center in terms of people's attention come the year end, and more so as we get into 2011. And what I'm talking about and what I'm concerned about is commodity price inflation. Now, we had some of that certainly in 2008. I think we will get it in terms of demand because the progressing markets are so strong, growing so rapidly. And so that's keeping demand. The China-led demand is strong for all of these industrial resources. But the really big development in the last few months has been the deterioration in crop yields and crop prospects in the agricultural sector. Now, we all know that with the agricultural commodities, the key variable is supply. And the supply is not looking good. There are a few exceptions, of course, but those tend to be smaller producers. Ireland, for instance, Owen tells me they've got a great wheat crop. Yes, but Russia was one of the biggest exporters, and it's had a disastrous spring wheat crop, and they're very late in sowing the winter wheat crop, which is more important than the spring wheat crop, and they're late with that because the effects of drought have lingered and they're running out of time. We've got problems with crops all over the globe. And you can find that information fairly readily on the internet, and I'm posting more of it here today. And the technical action is very, very strong. This is an area where I've concentrated some of my speculative activities in recent weeks, and I'll continue to do so. So these markets went gangbusters here today. But the pattern suggests that they could do a lot more. Soybeans, which I bought a little more of today, has only just or is only just breaking up out of a base formation. Now, what about precious metals? And I'll end on that note. Everything seems favorable except one factor, and that is that everybody's talking them up and everybody's long, and if you sell your precious metals, as I did a month or two ago, then people react with shock and surprise and disbelief and think you must be very foolish indeed. Well, I like the lower risk of the grain and bean complex right now, and you know, I've been playing the bull side of precious metals for the last decade, and no doubt will again in the not too distant future. I've had my hand over the button to increase long positions, but you know, in the global beauty contest, I can find other things that look attractive as well. But I think everything else is going in favor of the precious metals, except for this consensus view. And so somebody sent me an email which contains an article. And here's the big headline screaming at me as I speak to you. These 83 analysts believe gold will go parabolic to between $2,500 and $15,000. Now, that ticks off a few warnings in terms of contrarian thinking. But at the bottom line, it's the technical action that counts, and that's very good. So I see, really, really gold has resumed its overall upward trend, and the other precious metals are poised to do that. The laggard's platinum. If I bought one on Monday, it would probably be platinum. So there we are. An interesting environment. Lots of opportunities here overall. I feel we're spoiled for choice. I feel this is a little bit of a sweet spot in here. Those never last, but it's still very much a case of make hay while the sun shines, to coin a phrase. On that note, and so not to overrun too much on this audio, have a fantastic weekend. All the best.